Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Dr. Soren Show, discussing health topics that matter to you. The views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Soren and his guest, and do not represent the views of Blue Sky Broadcasting. Consult your doctor before making any changes.
Welcome to the Dr. Soren Show. This is Dr. Soren. I am super excited about our show today. We're going to be covering a couple of hot topics. Number one, I want to just cover a couple of things on COVID real quick. And number two, I want to go over obesity. That was my plan for the show. It's probably one of the greatest problems. We got summer coming up. Everybody's motivated to lose weight and be their best. So my guest today is Magda Sned. She's a nurse practitioner. Magda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
All right. Wonderful. Well, let's just jump right into it. You know, I watched a talk on YouTube by Dr. Ryan Cole from Southern Idaho there. He runs a large pathology lab. And, you know, I'd known this stuff, but he really emphasized it in a beautiful way. So one of the things is talking about the importance of vitamin D with COVID, because certainly there's a large fear with COVID, and it's reasonably so if you're, there's a couple of factors that you can change to really help reduce your mortality. So let's go ahead and talk about that one, Magda. Do you want to go ahead and start?
Sure. Yeah. So first of all, he says the most important thing is the vitamin D. Helps your immune system. And he goes on to mention how many people are basically deficient in vitamin D. And that's pretty much the majority of the population in the world, not just in our country. It's been known for a long time that vitamin D does play a big, big role in our health. And it's always been known that it's good for your bones and you have to get sunshine to get your vitamin D. But nowadays, nobody really gets a lot of sunshine because we mostly spend our days inside working. And if we go outside, we put on the sunblock. So
That's right.
Vitamin D also plays a very important part in our immune system, in our immunity. And it helps protect us from invading organisms such as, you know, the common cold, coronaviruses. And there's been lots of studies being done over the years about vitamin D. It's not a new thing since COVID started. It's that vitamin D does have, there's a huge correlation between the levels of vitamin D and people getting respiratory infection. For example, there was a study, I think that studied about 19,000 people. Mm-hmm. That was back in like 1980s, 1990s. And individuals with the lower vitamin D levels were more likely to self-report recent upper respiratory tract infection than those that had sufficient vitamin D levels. So this was even after they adjusted for variables, including the season, the age, the gender, body mass index, etc. So vitamin D levels are very, very important, and they do fluctuate throughout the year. So in the winter months, we don't get enough vitamin D.
Yes. And so that was some of the very, we've known this for a long time, but just wanting to emphasize that as we're on the radio here, but vitamin D is something very low risk to take. If you stay within the reasonable range, which, by the way, do you have some numbers? What do you recommend on taking?
Okay. So that is not always agreed on what to take. It's usually a minimum 2000 international units, but that's not enough for everybody during the winter months when you don't get out. So at least 5,000 a day, even more.
That's right. So I think anywhere from 2,000 to 10,000 units a day is reasonable. Probably around the 5,000-8,000 range is reasonable. By the way, I saw just a clip of an interview of Dr. Fauci, and he said in one of his interviews that he takes eight or 10,000 units in the winter months. So this is a well-known fact. I think it's not as well publicized, but it's something that can really help protect My understanding is there's been a number of studies showing that there's a higher mortality in people with low vitamin D with COVID. So, you know, it's something simple to do. And Dr. Ryan Cole said in that talk, he said, well, there is no flu season. There's only a low vitamin D season. And I love that quote. So you can think the flu season is not just something magical about the winter. It may also be that people's vitamin D levels are low.
Way lower. Yeah. Yeah.
And one other thought that was interesting to me is that, you know, we think of nursing home patients being at the highest risk for dying from COVID. And that's true. And people in nursing homes tend to be elderly. They tend to be frail. And so you think, okay, well, and have comorbidities. So you think, okay, that's definitely a factor in it. But one other factor I hadn't really correlated with being in a nursing home is you're probably not supplementing vitamin D and you're probably not getting out a lot. So that was also very interesting to me that may be one more factor that affects, you know, people dying from COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're in a nursing home, you don't really get a lot of sunshine. You don't go outside.
So that was another very interesting take-home lesson to me. So if your loved one is in a nursing home, you may consider supplementing vitamin D for them, again, in that range, and that may actually have a protective effect. And do you want to talk about the function of vitamin D a little bit?
Well, it's been known that it has several effects on our cells and within the immune system. It helps inhibit the B cell proliferation and it blocks the differentiation. Also suppresses the T cell proliferation. So that kind of helps with that, those inflammatory responses, and regulates. We've all heard about the cytokine storm. That's why people end up dying from COVID, because they develop the cytokine storm. So vitamin D, when you have enough vitamin D, it decreases the production of those inflammatory cytokines. So in short, that's kind of how it affects your immunity.
Right. So that's one of the things that's been killing people with COVID is the cytokine storm, which is basically your immune cytokines are messengers from the immune system that kind of regulate the immune system. And so one of the phases that people are dying of COVID is they get the cytokine storm where the immunological response, you know, is basically going crazy to use the lay analogy. Yeah. And so the vitamin D can help regulate and prevent that cytokine storm, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And also affects the monocytes and the dendritic cells.
Wow. So again, the monocytes, T cells, all those things, those are all part of your immune system. And so when you have low vitamin D, you know, so vitamin D is very protective of your immune system.
Well, we'll be right back. We're talking with Magda Sneden. We'll be talking a little bit more, finishing up on vitamin D and talking about obesity. You won't want to miss that. We'll be right back. We're back. This is Dr. Soren. We're talking to Magda Sneden, and I'd like to finish up on vitamin D. One of my issues is you hear a lot about social distancing, washing your hands, you know, get the vaccine. You hear a lot about those. Those are really emphasized, but you're not really hearing a lot about the importance of vitamin D in preventing this disease. So, Magda, what is the best way of getting vitamin D?
Going outside and getting some sunshine.
Great. Now, one of the problems is, so of course, getting outside in the sunshine. So if you're somebody that works out in the woods or, you know, is outside a lot in this, excuse me, in the summertime, that's the best way of getting vitamin D. What are some of the factors that affect that?
Well, like we talked, first of all, in the winter months, you don't get enough vitamin D, especially in the northern parts of the country. So everybody north of the 35th, I think, parallel. So everybody in Idaho automatically in the winter months, even if you go out with no clothes. So that's one major factor where you live. It affects also your age. So as we age, our skin's ability to process the sunshine to transform into vitamin D decreases. So we can't generate as much vitamin D. Skin color also affects it. So people with darker skin have lower levels of vitamin D. So if you are of a darker skin color, automatically you should take vitamin D supplements. Weight also affects vitamin D levels. So being overweight, obese, will guarantee not enough vitamin D levels circulating through your blood, which what's important for immunity. If you're obese, the vitamin D gets stored in the fat cells. So basically it stays in your fat cells and it's not being used. So those are some important factors that affect the D levels. Also the foods that we eat affect it because some foods are fortified with vitamin D. They have vitamin D. And while speaking of foods, eating unhealthy also makes a huge difference on your immune system. So it's not just vitamin D when you think of your immune system and things that help it. But, you know, vitamin C also has been shown that it's been known for a long time how important vitamin C is for our health. So if you eat your fruits and vegetables, you're more likely to get the nutrients that you need for your body to be able to fight any disease, any virus, bacteria that it encounters.
Right. So let's go over those. Let's just kind of break that down. So three things that I got from that. Number one, my understanding is about the 35th parallel, which is San Francisco. So if you live north of San Francisco, you are not getting enough vitamin D, even if you work outside in the winter or do something. And of course, in the winter up here, you've got more clothes on, so there's not very much of your skin exposed. So that's number one. If you live north of 35th parallel, which is a lot of America, you really need to supplement at least in the winter, even if you're outside in the summer.
Yeah.
Number two, you mentioned skin color. So obviously the darker you are, the more sunlight you can handle, the less likely you are to get a sunburn. But that also means your skin is less efficient at making vitamin D. So especially those that have darker skin color, they need to be out. They need to be out in the sunshine longer to produce the same amount of vitamin D. And they also, especially if they live up here or north of 35th, they really need to supplement vitamin D. And actually, they talked, sometimes about the racial disparity of this thing. And yes, there's multiple factors, but that is certainly one of them, that the darker your skin color, the more important it is to supplement vitamin D, especially if you live in the north and are not outside a lot.
So I recommend, if it's possible at all, everybody get their vitamin D level checked. You can ask your doctor to get your vitamin D level checked. And most insurance companies probably will cover that test. I had my levels checked and I thought I was doing pretty good because I do take vitamin D supplement. But even with all the supplementing I was doing, I was still on the lower end of normal, on the very low end of normal. So barely, you know, they say at least 30 your level should be. And mine, with taking about 10,000 units every day, it was only 36. An optimal level should be closer to 60, 80.
Right. I've heard a lot of different opinions on, like you said, but everything from 75 to 100. But certainly we can agree that probably being that 50, 60 range would be ideal. And you're right. I had my... vitamin D, one of the things about it is it's fat soluble. So that's where, if you're obese, you have more fat. So there are more cells that your vitamin D that'll absorb your vitamin D and store it. So that takes it out of your circulation. So therefore, if you're obese, you become at higher risk for vitamin D deficiency. Vitamin D is fat soluble, so you can overdose on vitamin D. But the amount needed is very, very high. And if you're worried about it, you can just get it checked, you know, once or twice a year and see where you're at.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other thoughts on vitamin D? We've kind of...
That's all mostly. So supplement, if you think you can get it from the sun, it's only in the summertime in our area in Idaho up here. And don't wear sunblock if you want to get it from the sun.
Okay, so just on that.
Sunblock on.
Obviously, skin cancer is a is a major risk factor, but sunscreen definitely affects the skin's ability to produce vitamin D. So I think the ideal is, I think they said about, if you're Caucasian, probably about 20 minutes a day of sunshine. So obviously don't burn.
I think
burn.
It's about, 20 to 30, about 30 minutes.
Yeah. So, and it depends on what time, if you're out in the middle of the day versus late day, but obviously don't burn, because skin cancer is related to sun burns. But if you just get, early morning, late evening sunshine, that's going to be ideal. So,
well, we got to take a break, but we'll be right back. This is Dr. Soren. When we get back, we'll jump into obesity. You won't want to miss that. Stay tuned.
Okay, we're back. This is Dr. Soren, and we're talking to Magda Snedden about vitamin D. And so that is a great segue into our next topic that I want to talk about. So we talked about the importance of vitamin D in protecting you from COVID. So now I want to just jump into obesity and the factors there. And we already said that if you're obese, that increases your risk of having low vitamin D. And there's also, speaking of COVID, there's also a lot of data that links obesity with increased risk of dying from COVID. So let's just jump right into that. So obesity has been a growing problem in America. The West Coast, it looks like Florida, Vermont, Connecticut, some of those areas. I'm going to share my screen with you here. So obesity has been is a growing problem in America, and you can see the West Coast seems to do a little bit better than the South, like Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. Those areas seem to have the highest obesity in America. But nonetheless, it's been a growing problem, and you can see that over the years, even since '99. The rate of obesity has gone from 30.5% in 99. It's gone to, looks like 27, 2018, over 40%. So that's a major gain. And then severe obesity has gone from 4.7% in 99 to 9.2% in 2018. So again, it's been a growing problem here. So let's go ahead and just define. Do you want to define, Magda, our what BMI is and how the classification of weight goes?
So basically, the obesity is categorized or defined by body mass index, and that's a ratio between your weight and height. And the higher your body mass index, obviously, the more overweight you are and obese. So a normal body mass index, as we see, it's between 18.5 and 25 is a normal body mass index. And overweight is after 25 and up to 30, your body mass index. And if you're over a 30 body mass index, then you're considered obese. And if your body mass index is over 35, that's considered morbid obesity.
Right. So, and again, this is not a perfect system. You know, if somebody's a weightlifter and they may be healthy and lean, they'll have a higher body mass index. But as a general rule, this, excuse me.
Ooh, bless you.
Thank you. But as a general rule, this works and kind of gives you an idea of where you're at. So, So and in America, again, this is actually really sad. Another statistic we have here is percentage of adults over 20 that are overweight, including obesity. So that means overweight, obese, or severe obesity. I mean, I have a slide here, but, you know, that number is crazy to me.
73%.
Yeah, so 73% of people in America
are
overweight, obese, or severely obese. So that means that's pretty much almost one in four is normal weight. So three out of four people are overweight. And the people, the percentage of people that are obese that are over 20 is 42%. So obviously this is a huge problem. like I said, this affects a lot of other medical conditions. And let's talk a little bit about some of those consequences of obesity.
Well, there are so many of them. So it increases your risk of insulin resistance, of developing diabetes, increases risk of having dyslipidemia or high cholesterol, high triglycerides.
Yep.
Go ahead.
So that's one of the first things I want to cover is this metabolic risks. So you definitely have an increased risk of diabetes, overall death. And again, everybody wants their cholesterol. You know, they talk about the importance of that and heart disease, but, you know, by not being obese, you can certainly help keep your cholesterol, triglycerides at a lower level.
Oh, absolutely. And same with diabetes. So losing weight, it has been shown for over 20 years now that you can actually reverse diabetes when you switch your diet and lose weight.
That's right. So diabetes to me is a disease of where your body runs out of places to store excess calories. So think of it like a gas tank. So when your gas tank is full and you keep pouring fuel into your system, everybody's got a genetically determined amount that will your body will hold. And so when you exceed that, then those calories spill over and your blood sugars go up and your body's no longer easily able to control the blood sugars. So let's talk about some of the cardiovascular consequences.
One of them and most common one is hypertension or high blood pressure, which is also called the silent killer. A lot of people don't even realize they have high blood pressure because they don't have symptoms. But being overweight and being obese will increase your chances that you will have high blood pressure and hypertension. And also being overweight, you get that high cholesterol and triglycerides, then you develop heart disease, coronary artery disease, congestive heart failure, and even increases your risk of having arrhythmias like atrial fibrillation. And a lot of people do have these conditions, these diseases, and also increases your risks of getting a stroke when you have, when you're obese, when you're overweight.
Yes. So again, unfortunately, those are all terrible consequences that are all linked to, you can die from any of those. And so again, maintaining normal weight can certainly help you reduce those. So let's look here. There's a study done by Sitar in 2014, and this showed diabetes type 2 as a risk factor for diabetes. And they have a nice graph here. Go ahead. You want to talk about how does your BMI affect your risk for diabetes?
So obviously, the higher your body mass index is, your BMI, the higher your risk for diabetes. So it goes up quite a lot. So you can see on the graph, it keeps. So once your BMI goes over 30, your risk is double.
That's right. So it looks like really the curve of the graph starts going up when your BMI gets kind of that, like you said, that 27, 29 range. That's where it really goes up. So as long as you keep your BMI between 23 to 25, your risk of diabetes is very low. Now, like I said, there's definitely a genetic link, but weight certainly plays a factor. Now, another study here by a gentleman named Bakshan published in the Lancet Journal of Endocrinology 2018. It shows an association of BMI and all-cause mortality. So again, this is the chance of dying from any cause. And this is actually done by age. But again, what does that show?
Well, same thing. The higher body mass index, the higher your chances of dying from pretty much anything.
That's right. So, and so that you know, it shows the sweet spot seems to be around 23, 24. So that would be your ideal BMI. Now, if somebody doesn't know how to calculate it, there are a ton of online calculators. You can go and just punch in your weight there. Just Google BMI calculator, punch in your height and weight. So really for at least statistically, based on this study, and I BMI of around 23, 24 seems to be about the sweet spot for reducing your risk. Now, there's obviously increased risk when people are too low. But again, that may be associated with other health problems. But that 23, 24 seems to be a sweet spot there. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more. What are some of the other other risks associated with being overweight?
Well, as we've talked about earlier, being overweight decreases your body's ability to fight disease and to keep you healthy. So excess weight is associated with increased risk of multiple cancers. So overweight and obesity is estimated to cause about 40% of all cancers in the United States.
Now, that is an insane statistic. So this comes from a study here published by Steele, 2004-2014, Weekly Mortality Morbidity Report, which is put out by the CDC. But again, they estimated 40%, so almost half of all cancers have a link to overweight and obesity. So again, not only decrease your risk of COVID, but certainly cancer. So cancer, heart disease seem to be the two biggest killers in America. And again, by maintaining a normal weight, you can certainly make a big difference in getting either of those two diseases.
Right. And it's not just about staying alive and not dying, because we all, you know, eventually die, but it's about the quality of life. And having these chronic diseases, usually your life is not necessarily the most pleasant, because you suffer the ailments from it. You know, you have to go to the doctor, you're not feeling good. I mean, having cancer is definitely not an easy thing.
That's right. So you know, obesity and overweight may actually increase the likelihood of dying from cancer. So even if you get the cancer, you're more likely to die from it if you're obese or overweight. And some of the mechanisms involved in this may include alterations in sex hormone metabolism, insulin-like growth factors. So there's a lot of mechanisms that they're defining and understanding, but the bottom line is your risk of dying is higher when you are overweight. So let's talk about some of the other consequences, downsides of consequences of obesity, Margaret. Go ahead.
So pretty much affects your entire body. So down to your musculoskeletal system, it affects your bones. So it can increase your risk of getting arthritis. And it's also linked to increased risk of getting gout. And both of these are painful conditions.
Painful conditions. And again, the musculoskeletal one, I think there's, you know, I tell people it's just your system is not designed for that much weight. So when you put more weight on your system than it's designed for, you're going to get breakdown of the joints, knees, hips, back. I always talk about if you're over about 50 years old, you're going to get knees, hips, and back pain. If you're more than 50 to 100 pounds overweight, that's something I talk a lot in clinic about. It's not discriminating. It's just a mechanical problem. You're overweighting. You're putting more weight than your joints are designed to have. let's go ahead and go to next topic. So hepatobiliary disease.
So which we kind of talked a little bit about, you know, high triglycerides, so which affects your liver. So being overweight increases your chance of also getting gallbladder stones, gallbladder disease, and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And actually the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, that's something that's on the rise recently in our country. So fatty liver disease, non-alcoholic, is, it's, you know, usually this is related to people that are drinking and that consume a lot of alcohol. But now it's linked to, you know, we see a lot more people that are not drinking alcohol in excessive amounts or probably not even much at all, and they develop fatty liver disease. And also it's linked to gastroesophageal reflux disease and cancers of the gastrointestinal tract.
Right. So yeah, just want a quick comment on that, like what you were saying, that hepatobiliary disease and non-alcoholic fatty cirrhosis. So certain foods certainly increase your risk of, again, when you take in excess calories, especially processed calories, your body needs to store that energy somewhere. So some of it gets stored in your fat, but once your fat cells kind of fill up and your body says, hey, don't want any more fat cells. And if you keep taking in too many calories, then your body just stuffs them wherever it can. And one of those places, it stuffs them in your liver, your kidneys, around your organs. And we in the healthcare field can see this when we get, if you get a CT scan, MRI, you can see fatty liver disease. And it may be somebody that you know has not drank excessively or really damaged their liver through drugs and other things, but you know, you can see fatty liver disease from excessive calories. So,
and mostly anyway. I've seen it in people that are overweight or obese and they deny consuming alcohol.
That's right. And a couple more things. So what about fertility? Does obesity affect fertility?
Oh yeah, it affects your fertility because when you're obese, you're in a state of inflammation. It causes inflammation throughout your body. So even your reproductive system is not working properly. And I've seen that, you know, when people lose weight, they are able, when women, because women are the ones that reproduce, they're able, you know, to become pregnant.
Yeah. So something else to think about there. If somebody's having an issue with that, let's just keep going through some of these kidney problems.
Yeah, it's kidney disease, kidney stones, urinary incontinence. All these are related to or can be affected by obesity.
Okay, and then any other factors? Let's talk about the psychosocial factors. Now, if I'll just go from here. So there's certainly a stigma of obesity, and there's even data showing obese people are discriminated against in hiring, especially for the more physically demanding occupations, certainly a link to depression, dementia. So again, those are some of the factors.
Okay, you're frozen again, so I don't know.
Okay, I'm back. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, but I don't know where you.
I just talked about some of the psychosocial factors there, including the stigma of obesity, dementia, depression. So talked about hiring discrimination against people that are obese, especially in the more physically demanding occupations. So let's just go over a couple more things so that obesity can affect. Let's talk about the respiratory issues.
Definitely, it increases your chances of sleep apnea, and also it has a correlation to asthma. So your asthma can be much better controlled when you lose weight or when you're at, you know, a normal body weight. And sleep apnea that's been known for a long time that also losing weight totally improves sleep apnea for most people, maybe not for everybody. And maybe there are some people that are not overweight or obese and have sleep apnea, but the majority can improve their sleep apnea with losing weight.
That's right, because sleep apnea can be a mechanical problem. It can even be a central problem in the brain, but generally, or most commonly, because again, obesity is so prevalent in America, it can also be a mechanical issue of when you lay down, if you have a lot of fat around your neck, it can obstruct your respiratory
pathway. And then you go into this vicious circle. You're obese, so your body, your immune system is already compromised. You have all these conditions that you may have some of these conditions, then sleep apnea, you don't get enough sleep at night, you don't get enough sleep, it affects your immune system as well. So, it decreases your body's ability to fight infections or to fight disease.
That's right. So very good point there. And by the way, if just a plug for this, if you have sleep apnea, if you think your loved one, you hear them, snoring at night and taking pauses and breathing, make sure you get that taken care of, because CPAP machines can certainly make a huge difference and save lives. Let's just talk real quick. Infection, disease, we kind of covered this one, but certainly infections, when you're overweight, you're at higher risk for all different kinds of infections.
Yeah, I mean, every infection, including, post-operative infections, when you're in the hospital, getting, nosocomial infections, respiratory infections, getting the flu, like we talked about before, and, even COVID-19, which is still a topic these days.
That's right. So just kind of a summary slide here, but just in summary, so obesity can affect pretty much all different organs in your body, from things like intracranial hypertension, stroke, cataracts, coronary artery disease, diabetes, dyslipidemia, hypertension, pancreatitis, cancer, phlebitis, skin conditions, gout, osteoarthritis, gynecological issues, infertility, polycystic ovarian syndrome, again, that has a high link to obesity, gallbladder disease. I remember in medical school learning a little acronym, people at highest risk for gallbladder disease, fat female 40, right? So that obesity is part of the little thing you memorize for the risks of obesity. So non-alcoholic.
And you mentioned, intracranial hypertension, and that also can be why some people have headaches and they don't know why they have headaches.
Very good point. Very good point with that. So again, linked to hypertension. So just some, I know we've spent a lot of time talking about the problem here, and I think I'd love to expand on another show about the really go into depth on some of the things people can do. But let's just quickly go over some of the things that people can do to lose weight.
Well, one of them is sleep more. So most people in this country don't get enough sleep at night. So at least 7 hours a night, 7 to 9 hours per night especially closer to, around 8 hours a night is ideal. Because if you don't get enough sleep, then your hormones get affected. So the leptin and the ghrelin hormones affect your
Those can affect your hunger because they control that. Certainly, it can also affect cortisol growth hormone and impaired metabolism of food. So again, sleep, the reason I want to mention sleep is it's such an important factor, and oftentimes it is not looked upon. People want to focus on exercise for losing weight, but sleep is certainly very, very important. Magda, this has been really fun. You have always enjoy talking to you. For those that don't know, you and my wife have been friends for decades, and you're probably one of the ones that helped us change our diet into a healthier diet. And so I guess we'll forever be grateful for that, Magda. You've always kind of been a champion of health. So we really appreciate it. And I appreciate you taking some time to come on the show and give us some hints on how to stay healthy, how to avoid COVID, and how to feel and look good.
Yes, thank you. My pleasure.
Okay, thank you so much. All right. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Bye.